Thank you for coming and giving us the opportunity to brief you on this new process. For us in the Labor Party, this is a historic occasion. We've joined mainstream political parties around the world, including democratic participation in the leadership selection. This will be the biggest participation in Australasia, and we're really pleased to be joining other countries around the world. The Westminster democracies, it's only Australia and New Zealand who haven't included member participation in selections, and so we're very pleased that we are embarking on this process. There's four important principles that the process will be based on. The first one is democratic integrity, the second one is transparency and fairness, and the third one is membership participation, and the last one is party growth. The changes are an important part of the review that we did last year. There were a number of changes, but probably the two that enhance democratic participation and help modernise us into being a 21st century movement for change are democratic participation in the selection and having a binding policy platform. So we welcome this as an opportunity for our members to really participate. We also expect that from it that the leader who is selected will have a strong mandate, and that we will go forward with really strong support and unity after such a robust process. My expectation is that there will be high standards of conduct. We will have a code of conduct that will be given to all candidates. We also have a leadership advisory group that will oversee the process. There's been a long and robust process of development of the rules that's included international input and legal advice. So it's been a very thorough process. Members are really looking forward to it, and I'll hand you over to Tim, who will give you detailed information on the process. Tim.
Kia ora, I'm Tim Barnett. I'm Labour Party's General Secretary, and I'm also the returning officer for the election. And what we're just giving you here is information, including the key dates, which were agreed this morning by our New Zealand Council meeting, our national governing body. But also you've got a copy there of the election rules, because as Maura said, this is a new process. We've had to develop rules appropriate to this process. We've worked very closely with the UK Labour Party. They have a, not identical, but a similar system to us. I have to say, having done that, I think our rules are somewhat more comprehensive than theirs are. But rules relating to the election. It's important to understand the way that the election is going to happen. So what I'm going to do is just talk through this top note that's got some of the dates in as well. There is an electoral college, but the college is a concept rather than a physical meeting of people. The college consists of three sections: the party membership, secondly the caucus members, and thirdly our affiliates. So there are voting rights in each of those three sections. Every current party member, financial party member as of midnight last night, will get a single vote in the process. Those votes will be posted out next week, all assuming that we get more than one nomination, of course. The voting papers will be posted out next week, and there'll be a couple of weeks in which they can respond by post. There'll also be a series of hustling meetings for candidates, pretty similar in many ways to the meetings held in our last leadership contest back at the end of 2011. I mean, the difference here is that members will have a vote. So if members want to take their vote they've received in the post along to the meeting, they'll be able to vote at the meeting. So those party membership will have a vote. Secondly, all caucus members will separately receive a vote, and their votes collectively make up 40% of the college. And thirdly, there's a slightly more complex arrangement for our six affiliates, all of which are unions, which essentially involve people who are democratically elected within those affiliates. So these are the delegates to the conferences of the affiliates, who themselves will form a grouping and they will cast votes individually. So they won't be under instruction from the affiliate. They'll be receiving the votes individually, at their home address. They will be consulting with people within their workplace, the people they represent within that union conference arrangement, and they will then vote individually, with the exception of the service workers union, who don't have that structure, and they will give each of their members individually a vote, and those votes will be cast by members of the union going along to one of those hustling meetings and actually casting a vote at the meetings. So three sections to the college: individual party members, caucus members, and affiliates, so six affiliated unions. So it's a large process. As Maura said, within Australasian politics, this is significantly the biggest process involving thousands of people to make a key decision for our party's future. So what you've got on this top sheet here is a bit of a summary of that. We've agreed that nominations are now open, and they close at 10 p.m. this coming Monday, and the names of the people nominated will be released on Tuesday. Only caucus members can be nominated, and two of their colleagues need to be their nominees. Nominators. So they had to get two people to sign the nomination form to be in the race. And then we are hoping to be able to announce results 3 weeks on Sunday. So that's on Sunday the 15th. And then in the middle, you'll see a series of hustling meetings, which will spread through the main population centres in the country. And we're going to try and finalise some of those details of where those meetings are in the next few days. But the rules state that the meetings will be open, the speeches at the meetings will be open to the media, but then the question and answer afterwards will be a closed session, so that particularly for local media, they can actually cover the fact the meetings happened and hear what the candidates have to say. And then we've got at the bottom here the contact, so any detailed questions about the affiliates vote or the caucus vote can go directly to Angus McConnell or Chris Hipkins, and then I'm acting as the overall returning officer. And then just lastly, because there's quite a lot of detail here, and you're welcome to come back to me later, on the second sheet I've just given a bit of background and then just summarised the contents of what you've got in the actual election rules. So you can see they flow through nomination, the voting system, who's eligible to vote, and the process and the timeline, some of the rules relating to that, so the administration. And we're just, having just agreed the dates, we're now going to go through and attach those dates to the process as it goes through. And then you have appendices relating briefly to each of those three strands of the election. So following, last point really, many of you at our conference last November where you saw the essence of these rules passed. And behind that process of getting a couple of paragraphs through, there's been a great deal of work, as Maura was saying, to get to this point, to actually create detailed rules which are rigorous enough to govern what is going to be a complex but a very directed democratic process over the next 3.5 weeks.
How important is it for you to have an election process rather than just one person put their hand up and go forward?
The members are very enthusiastic about democratic participation. If caucus selects one person, then I'll confirm that person. But I would think that there's a widespread view among members that this is an important process. Selecting the next Prime Minister, they welcome the opportunity for that to be a really robust, careful process rather than a meeting behind closed doors in the caucus room.
So would it be in the best interest of caucus then to put just one name forward?
That's a decision. Who's nominated is a caucus decision. I'm just saying that the members are looking forward to this process.
If they don't, if there is no contest, are you worried that whoever that person is will then lack the wider party support?
Well, I see advantages to the process, but the way the rules are written, it's caucus's decision whether they put up one person or a number of candidates.
You talked about a code of conduct. Are you worried that there will be this will expose divisions within Labor, this process?
The international people who've studied the different selections say that the most Machiavellian processes are the old traditional ones behind closed doors, and that by opening processes up, actually you don't get quite the same level of some of the tactics that take place. So I'm not expecting it to be a deterioration.
Do you detect, though, that there is a sense of division between a large portion of the caucus who might not want a contest and the party that does, or lingering divisions between caucus and party that could be exposed in a contest?
I think it's understandable that in the change from a process that was purely a caucus process, that they are some members of caucus may be less enthusiastic than members of the party who are welcoming the opportunity to participate.
Yeah. How long does someone have to be a member for to vote? Could they have joined yesterday or today?
New membership that would entitle you to vote closed off last night, so we hear one of the blogs is encouraging people to join. Well, they're welcome to join, but they won't be participating in the membership selection if they're joining today. If they're members whose membership's just lapsed for a short amount of time, we're giving those people who we know were genuine members 2 weeks to join.
Did you see a surge in votes before midnight last night?
We saw both people who'd previously been members rejoining, and we saw some membership coming in.
What kind of numbers?
I'm not aware of the numbers.
How many points do you have?
We don't release that information. We never have. Well, with the affiliated union members and individual members, I think on the returns that have gone in, it's between 40 and 50,000.
Did you have confidence in David Shearer as a leader?
Yes, I did.
But you felt, you said this morning that you felt it was time for him to go.
Well, there's been a lot of feedback both from the community and members about how important it is to have a change of government and a Labor-led government, and people were concerned that we're not making enough progress to be sure about that.
Did you feel that he wasn't able to win, essentially, an election?
I think there was a lot of feedback that we needed a leader who would take us through, with the polls a lot higher than they are now.
Did you have confidence in David Shearer?
Yes.
Mike Williams this morning on radio said the New Zealand Council hadn't been supportive of Mr. Shearer.
Yes, I heard him say that, and he spoke about some people at last conference. I think he's wrong. I don't think any member of New Zealand Council was one of the people who spoke for that remit.
Is there a fear that he wasn't cutting it in situations that... But you agree that David Shearer wasn't cutting it, there needed to be a change?
I think there's a general agreement that the place that we were in the polls was not the place that we want to be. David Shearer's made the decision, having taken soundings, as he said, to step down, and we're moving forward with a new process, and we'll all be getting behind the new leader.
Is there a fear in these situations that it becomes very much divided between the party and the caucus?
Yeah, I don't accept that narrative. I know that's a line that the media have been running. I think there are a range of views. There have been a range of views in caucus, and there have been a range of different people being supported in the party. As David Parker said this morning, politicians are mature, and I think a lot of people are looking at what's best for the country and what's best for the party rather than who they may have friendships with. So,
how much do you think that speculation, but also talk within Labor itself, questioning David Shearer's leadership, how much impact do you think has had on the polls?
Well, I think there's certainly been concern amongst supporters and amongst members that we need to be doing better than we are.
But do you think that has had a negative impact on the polls, though, the very fact that people have been questioning his leadership?
Oh, I can't give an answer on that. I don't know how broad the base was you're talking about, Brent. Yeah.
Generally, parties look disunited, they don't tend to win support.
Yeah.
And the Labor Party hasn't looked united, probably, since Phil Goff took over
from Alan Clark. The feedback that we've been getting hasn't been about that. It's been about our ability to perform, and people have wanted to see some differences in the leadership performance.
Where did David Shearer go wrong? Why do you think he couldn't get those numbers up in the polls?
Yeah. We really called this conference to speak to you about our processes moving forward.
Where do you think he went wrong?
So I'm not going to take a whole lot more questions looking back on...
Can I just ask, what happens if the caucus vote is split? How does that 40% get?
Maybe I can explain that. I mean, the 40-40-20 is really just an indication of the weighting. So if half the caucus members voted for candidate A, then that means effectively 20% of the 100% goes to them, and then 20% goes to the other candidate. So it's all entirely individual. So within an affiliate, if the delegates voted 80% for one candidate, 20% for the other, that percentage of the affiliation would be split accordingly.
But it's a preferential vote.
Yes. So if there's more than two candidates, then we take the candidate with the fewest number ones, and then we transfer their number twos across.
What lessons do you think a new leader could learn from David Shearer's leadership?
Have we got any more questions that are actually about the process that we call the conference for?
How disappointing is it that you have to run seven leadership contests? I mean, between elections.
This is the first time that we have had democratic participation, and so it's actually our first time running this process.
But it's a second leadership contest within a couple of years.
Yeah. Are there any further questions about the process?
So it's over. About the 40,000 figure that you gave earlier, can you just clarify exactly what that is? Is that the number of people that will be voting on the leadership?
We can't say how many people will choose to vote. What I was answering was, with the affiliated union members and the individual and family members of the party, it's between 40 and 50,000 members.
You say that the affiliates will not individually or collectively vote as a block.
Yes.
How can you enforce that? How can you be sure?
That's an agreement that they have made.
Well, the communication, obviously, you can look at results, and if it's clear that every affiliate had voted one way, then there might be an indication it wasn't as the rule suggested. But the union doesn't vote as a block. I mean, the individual delegates vote individually. The communication is with them at their home address, and they vote back to us.
And do you expect the union themselves to keep the party and not vote?
Absolutely. I mean, I heard last week that the dairy workers and I think also the meat workers, in the event of an election, were going to have shop floor meetings so that the delegates who were voting would actually have a wider discussion that would feed into that person. So I think you're going to see, this is a kind of an example of different models of how people's views get heard, but overall it's going to touch on many thousands of people's lives as party members, as union members, and also as caucus members. So it's a pretty amazing exercise that we're entering into.
What are the names of the six unions?
Yeah, they're in the paper there. They're listed on Appendix A.
If David Shearer gone, is there a chance that the women's only electorates could come back on the table?
It's possible, it's unlikely.
Mm. How would that work? You say it's possible, how would that work?
You'd have to give that some thought.
The so-called man band could be back.
No, I mean, technically, it would mean somebody raising it as an amendment at a conference. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be raised by the council, but we're a democratic organisation, and if a element of our organisation wants to raise that issue, they can. But we've made it pretty clear as a council what our position is, and the caucus has made their position about it equally clear.
But it was David Shearer that effectively put the kibosh on that, so with him gone, so-called man band could be back on the table.
Well, we're a democratic organisation, and that's played no element in any discussion in the last few weeks. What I'm saying is, you asked, technically, can it happen? And what I'm responding is that if it's put forward as an amendment, that's always going to be technically possible. But since the most powerful bodies in the party have clearly indicated their position in relation to it, I think it's a theoretical question.
So that would have to happen on the conference.
Yeah, it's a conference decision. I mean, when we're on the conference floor, it's a conference, it's a party membership that rule our organisation.
Can you give us a bit more clarity about affiliates with the Circus mm-hmm. and Food Workers Union? That one's a bit different to the other ones.
Yeah, yeah.
So can you explain what the delegates to the National Conference means? Do each union have about five people?
Oh no, it's an average of about 60 people per union. And these are people elected to represent different sections of the union at their national conferences. And what the unions agreed was to go beyond their executive, which I think would be open, relating to an earlier question, would be more open to an instruction. They agreed to go to the widest democratic base within their organisation. So for five of the affiliates, they've gone for their conference delegates, essentially. And as I said, they will be consulting more widely. in that process. The service workers don't have that structure, partly because the nature of their membership are people who are working often antisocial hours in quite isolated situations. So they tend to make decisions more collectively. And so they've gone for a process where every member of that union has an ability to cast a vote, and that's going to be done through the various meetings we're calling. So they will be encouraged to go to those meetings, listen to the candidates and cast a vote.
And so how widely do you expect the affiliates to take soundings from the membership?
Oh, I mean, we've had absolute undertakings. It'll be as wide as possible, and I'm absolutely convinced that the affiliates will do that. I mean, it's an exciting... I mean, this gets more exciting the wider you go, and so to restrict it to a handful of people... is not going to be effective for that union. And it's an attractive element of affiliation to our party that the union members actually have a say in the election of our leader. So this is a very exciting time for a political party when we're going into this territory.
So do members have to turn up to those meetings to vote, or will there be postal votes?
For service workers, they have to turn up unless, and you'll see in the rules, there are if they live more than 32 kilometres from a meeting, or if they have a disability or sickness or some other reason, they can vote they can get a postal ballot, which we'll administer centrally, but otherwise they'll turn up at a meeting.
But that's only the...
Just the service workers.
...has to be at that meeting to vote.
But, yeah.
But will their vote count within the 20% or the 40%?
The 20%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could so many thousands.
So they'd have it. I mean, just to develop that. So we have three separate entitlements to vote. So people who are union, who are members of an affiliated union, or aren't a member of another party, have an entitlement to vote when it comes to the service workers. All party members have an entitlement to vote, and caucus members do. So that you can have people who are voting in more than one section because they have separate entitlement to do that.
Do you have any idea how much this is going to cost the party?
Well, international experience is that actually the ability to participate helps to strengthen the party, brings in more members, and also brings in revenue. So we're not expecting it to be a costly exercise financially.
But have you done a budget or not
that? That's all. We're going back to our council on Sunday with some of the more technical things, including the details of the code of conduct. So we're just getting that budget sorted.
Sorry, Tim, are you saying that
if they were a party member, yeah, because they're a member of a union and they pay their fee to the union, and member of the party and they pay their fee to the party, so they've got an entitlement to vote in two places. The impact would be down to a tiny decimal point, but they have that right.
On that same point, you said earlier that some blogs have been urging people to join the party, but they won't get to vote. Can people not join the service and food workers union?
No, it's the same rule we've got around having to be a member at the time that the...
So by midnight last night.
Yeah.
And with so many thousands of people voting in this election, how can you ensure the integrity of it with, you know, no fraud, etc.?
Well, we're intending to work with a provider who's experienced in operating elections. So in terms of the dissemination of votes and the returns to them, we'll be absolutely convinced that that will have integrity. The issue is, I mean, our membership system is pretty strong and resilient, and obviously we're checking through that to make sure there were no outstanding membership applications and so forth. So we're pretty certain it's going to be a strong and a fair process.
What do you expect the code of conduct to prevent?
To prevent behaviour which would... act against that initial principle, particularly around democratic integrity and certainty. So to take a ludicrous example, if somebody decided to pour $100,000 into their leadership campaign, that would suggest that it would not necessarily generate the most balanced result. So just as the Electoral Commission, on a much wider basis, and our electoral law has rules governing behaviour of candidates in elections, so in a much more modest way, code of conduct, as in the UK and as in other progressive parties that have done this, the code of conduct is about making sure that people operate in a fair and a proper way, so that they're focusing on the positives and not on attacking each other, that they're focusing not on spending lots of money, not on obtaining mailing lists and mailing people out. So you'll see a rule there about the fact that any mailings to the party by a candidate should be coming through the party headquarters rather than going separately. So it's just a way of channeling and ensuring a fairness in a vote, which is what any organisation does when they're trying to run a fair election.
Why shouldn't they be able to spend what they want in a democratic process?
Because we operate an electoral system in New Zealand and doesn't enable people to spend what they want.
Do you have a limit, though? I mean, do they have a...
Yeah, we look. Yeah, I mean, it includes a limit. We haven't set the limit, but it includes the ability for the council to set a limit for spending.
Do you have any idea what that limit would be?
That's when the decision's to be made on Sunday. So.
Well, we won't speculate on that, but we'll get our code of conduct approved by the council on Sunday night. So I think we've probably answered.
Will they get any party funding for their campaigns, or will they be expected to stump up the money themselves?
No, they'll stump it up themselves.
What about travel?
For the party wouldn't be funding that.
That's
the question you need to put to the candidates. So, I mean, the party, as was raised earlier, I mean, the party will generate some donations and hopefully to help us support this process. But it's also quite an expensive process to adopt, so we're certainly not going to be funding candidates to do things.
Mm. But it's an important process, and we're looking forward to the opportunity. So, thank you all very much for coming.
How's fundraising going for next year?
A fundraising for next year? Yeah. We're doing some special fundraising events that at the moment are very successful. Obviously, we'll be focused in the next few weeks on this process, and then we'll get back into that mid-September. So thank you very much. If you've got further questions, you're welcome to contact Tim. The spokesperson, the media spokesperson for the affiliates is Angus McConnell. And if you've got questions about the parliamentary end, the spokesperson is our senior whip, Chris Hipkins. Thank you very much.